show success. All for one and one for all. Unity means solidarity. Yeah. United we stand. Divided we fall. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us there in the chat room, and also you can call in 402-237-2525. That's the United States, 402-237-2525 is the number to call. Also, visit GorillaMedia.co.nz and check out the somewhat scary articles that are posted there. Did you see the video? I'm sure we've all seen certain videos of the Japanese tsunami, but not like this. Guys sitting in a building that's five stories high, right on the water. You watch everything around them get washed away very, very slowly at first. But then you realize that it's not just one big wave that just sloshes over the top. No, no, no. It's like the entire ocean was just spilling onto the land endlessly. It just kept coming and coming and coming. The video's unedited. And it keeps going for 5 minutes. There is still this wall of water just cascading inwards. It's incredible. You know, I've never seen so much water. It's like the ocean itself breathed a huge sigh of relief and got out of the bathtub. Unbelievable. What's more amazing is that the building that he was in didn't get washed away. The power of the ocean can wash away pretty much anything, as far as I know. And this is kind of like a prime example. When you understand a little better that maybe everything isn't going quite so well, that a huge disaster is on its way, it makes you think desperately on how you can get yourself out of the situation, and if you're not in it, how glad you are that you're not in it, but how terrible it is for everybody else. You know, we've got this kind of juxtaposition on some form of common morality, where it's not a nice idea to feel happy about not getting completely screwed over by dangerous slime bags, but it's not okay to survive a terrible disaster by being prepared and talking about it in advance and preparing for it. No, 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 that's just fear-mongering. What are you talking about? Preparedness? Life's never been threatened before. You're crazy. Tinfoil hat, bro. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh, yeah. It's business time. is business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
It's business. It's business time.
Oh, yeah. That's right. We go brush our teeth. That's all part of it. That's foreplay. You go sort out the recycling. That's not part of it, but it's still very important. Next thing you know, we're in the bedroom. You're wearing that ugly, baggy t-shirt from that team-building exercise you did for your old work. And it's never looked better on you. Oh, wah, 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 wah. I take off my trousers and trip over them, but I turn it into a little dance that makes you think, yum, he's very sexy. Now I'm down to just my socks. And you know, when I'm down to just my socks, what time it is. It's time for business. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time. You know when I'm wearing my socks, it's business time.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm wearing my socks, my business socks. Are you? Hey, well, sometimes you need to pull your socks up and sort of get angry. And get wild. Because, hey, there's enough reasons to be. At the very least, something tells me that we are locked in a perpetual state of political deadlock. Nobody who wants to make any change, real, actual change, not change you can beg for that you get from Barack H. O. Barry, or change you can get unemployed for, like John Key here in New Zealand. Not that kind of change. No, no, no. They use it as a slogan. It doesn't mean anything to them. They don't know what it is. They haven't changed anything. All they've done is perpetuated everything. That's all they do. These appointed guardians of the status quo to rob you any progress that you might make. Supposedly, New Zealand and America back in the day were quite well-off countries because they owned all their land, all their resources. Or at least underneath the soil, there was a lot of... Well, in fact, scratch that. I don't think any person or nation has actually implicitly owned all their land or all their resources because they've had private property, haven't they? But they did make a bargain with the devil of international bankers where they could use everybody's private property as collateral on loans that the government can perpetually take out without asking any people each time they make a loan. Yep, that's basically the banking system in a nutshell. They sold you out. Okay, you had no idea what the heck was going on. You have no idea what the heck your income tax was for. And when I say you, I mean just in general, you know, the slaves that haven't woken up, haven't done anything about it. And as a result, we are being pushed incrementally into receivership. Mm-hmm. We're the residents of Thriftville that thought we could get it all. We can have all the luxuries, all the lifestyles, and none of the earning potential, and none of the resources, and none of the capital, and none of the sovereignty. As if everything that really actually built these countries up and made them what they were suddenly had the rug pulled out from under them, sold out from within. The most dangerous type of enemy is the enemy from within. What do you think every single monster movie also has an enemy from within? Jurassic Park, for example. There was the fat programmer guy who rigged all the stuff and made the park fences go out. Heaps of people died as a result. Inside Man. The Alien movie. The android guy who was setting up the crew so that they were expendable, so that they could get their specimen. Inside Man. The inside man is the ultimate fall, the ultimate enemy, you know? And if there is an ultimate inside man, it's your leader. You know? In intelligence circles, they say, if you're being set up, there's only two people that could be setting you up. The person who planned the operation or the person that commissioned it. The person who paid for the operation or the person who planned it. Those are the only two people that can ever really set anyone else up, because they're the only ones with the overview. This is what government is. It's the ultimate setup. An intelligence operation against people who are not intelligence agents. You know, it's like taking candy from a baby. We were so ignorant back in the days. You know, you say, oh, these Nazis, they're going to kill us and everything, which they were. They didn't tell you that they were funded by the same banks that were funding your war effort, though. But everybody got up in arms and rushed off to die. And the country got phenomenally in debt. And aren't we all better off for it that we lost practically half a generation of men or whatever? It's just beyond reckoning the carnage and the stupidity. All the evil that one would have to be under the sway of to believe that killing other human beings is a bright way to ascertain any form of profit. I don't get that, man. You can't really profit off human life. After all, it's inherently wasteful. Look at the inherent value that a human life has. It's freaking awesome. Humans can do amazing stuff. Individuals alone can do really amazing things. You know, you listening right now to this radio show, yes, you have the ability to do amazing things. But of course, you're not supposed to know that. Because, hey, you'd be much harder to control. It's like somebody with self-esteem, you know. You ever tried to insult somebody that has a lot of self-esteem? You wish you hadn't insulted them. Because they don't take any flack, man. All right? And that's what we've forgotten to do with our politicians. When they dodge a question, say, he's a liar! He's a liar and a thief and a cheat, and he's trying to steal a country and sell us out to foreign banks. That's what you should say. You don't say, okay, sir, I'll send you a letter. Come on. A letter. He's not even going to read it. Get his secretary to gloss over it and find some description of copy-paste document or copy-paste mentality as a substitute and send you some automated response with a predetermined conclusion. You know? No wonder people have become politically apathetic in this country. They don't feel as if their politicians don't care about them. And so they should. But unfortunately, although people realize that politicians don't care about them, they still persist in voting for them. If you ever saw the foolishness of attempting to coax a wolf into your house to snuggle up next to your sheep, this is the moment. Oh, he's got a nice smile and $50 million that he stole off the American populace while he was a corporate merchant banker for overseeing really dangerous kind of loans that had AAA ratings falsified by ratings agencies that were on the take. You know, he's a perfect person to lead our country. Oh, come on. Seriously. If anybody out there is an investigative journalist or somebody who actually gives a flying F about what happens to the country, it's not that difficult to learn the past of these political creatures, see who their connections are, okay? In political circles, entertainment circles, and it's all about connections. And same with business, too. And those three industries, politics, business, and media, incidentally, were the three industries highlighted by the American Medical Journal as a place where they predict psychopaths would gather. Business, politics, and media is where most of the sociopaths are. This is me saying it. This is the American Medical Journal, okay? You know? Pay the piper, call the tune. We've got sociopaths running the country. Yep. What do you do with sociopaths? Rehabilitation doesn't work. Especially when they've got a gun in their hand. But essentially, what you're dealing with here is a bunch of people who don't understand what the concept of honor, truth, or patriotism really means. Because they don't actually have any real sort of soul, like it would be. No loyalty to something greater than themselves. I mean, pretend that they do, or think that they do. But ultimately, the only reason why they're heading in any particular direction is because it benefits them. You know, that's at the end of the day what the play is, okay? And you can see these people, dead eyes, absolutely no life. Their laughs are very fake. I don't know, everything about them seems totally fake to me. I don't know about these people that can see, like, auras or feel certain vibes or something. But, I don't know. Every now and again you see people, and for some reason, they don't look threatening at all. But for some reason, they really scare the skin off you. They really, really creep you out. Freak you. Make your hair stand up on end. I get like that with a lot of politicians. Really do. Just something about some of these people, man. I'm not saying all of them. There's good cats in there that are just deceived and foolish enough to believe what they've been lied to about, or they've been educated enough to believe what they've been lied to about, you know, one or the other. It's funny how the paradigm exists between stupidity and education, because it's a sliding scale between them, but the opposite ends of each of them produce the exact same result. You can have severely retarded, educated people who are just incapable of thought, incapable of even looking at evidence. And then you can have severely stupid, uneducated people who are incredibly, belligerent and foolish, of course. But they're only a couple of $1,000 in debt. Not hundreds of thousands. You know, that's funny. Everybody talks about, like, there's these real important differences between people, and that's why we don't get along. It's like, no, mate, there really isn't a fundamental difference between anybody. The only difference there is you thinking there is, all right? It's all that perception, like, trying to work itself up in your mind to think that you're better than somebody else. Ultimately, that's where the definition of different, for me, really, anyway, comes from, is saying they're different to me and I'm better. You know? And maybe on some occasions, you know, that's an appropriate methodology of thought, because you're dealing with people on a daily basis who are absolutely foolish, have no idea of what the heck political discourse is, or any idea of how to accomplish anything within any sphere of influence within their lives. Okay? You have to deal with these people. And if you didn't have any self-confidence, mate, you'd just be broken down. Seriously. There's just a whole plethora of people out there who just won't believe the truth if they tell it to them, or if it reached up and bit them in the ass. And it's frustrating. You know, I understand that. However, doesn't give us an excuse to say to these fluoride heads and assorted zombies that they're scum. Even if they are. Because then it implies that we're better than they are. All right? And, you know, that's a sliding scale too. And who knows what kind of monster you might turn into with that kind of thinking. And that's all I'm saying. You know, it's like judging people is all good and well as it pertains to, you know, your personal safety. For example, I wouldn't want to hang out with gang members at all because they're prone to violence. And you know me, I'm an offensive person to be around at the best of times. You know, I might say the wrong thing and wind up with a few less teeth. So I choose not to associate with those people. You know, cause and effect. It seems pretty straightforward. I don't want to be around people who are you know, breaking into places and then coming back to my place to hide out for the evening or something like that. You know. And this is just what happens sometimes. You have to kind of try to, at least in some way, try to comprehend the greater picture. Politics rules every single aspect of your life. Okay?
How can you say that, Vinny? Politics, you know, only voting.
Well, everything. Okay? You know, did you drive today? How much did that gas cost you? Government taxed a heck of a lot out of that, didn't it? So it cost you more. How much did you earn at work today? How much did they tax you on that? Oh, government did that too? Oh, yeah, that's a bit of control right there. Makes you strong. It makes them stronger while you get weaker. You know, you have to work harder to get less. Was there any inflation today? I'll bet there probably was. Devalues your dollar and your hard work and sweat. So you're working harder today more than you were yesterday. Okay? With your car as well, did you by chance, I don't know, have to get some description of government certificate for roadworthiness on that vehicle? How much did that cost you? Government did that too. All right? They impose all this stuff. Did you pay a mortgage or taxes? How much interest are you paying on those loans? Government can regulate those as well. It affects every single part of your life. That's why it's important to know what the F is going on. Period. It's not that difficult. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. And we'll be right back after the break. Gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Speaking of unconventional news, those of us who are aware of a deindustrialization / depopulation agenda concocted by the elite, known as Agenda 21, understand that there are threats right now in nearly every country on Earth. Agenda 21 offices have been set up everywhere. Everywhere. All right? If you don't believe me, go search the council registrars in your country. All right? Seriously, you'll find an Agenda 21 office. Even Hamilton here in New Zealand has an Agenda 21 office. All right? This is no joke. Look at it. Okay? Includes such wonderful plans as the the end of civilization as we know it. You know, moving people out of all rural areas, tossing us into tight prison-like cities, absolutely no possibility of being independent or living off the land, sack 'em and pack 'em slave blocks along railroad tracks, underground or otherwise. So, the end of private transportation as well. This headline here from the Daily Telegraph, or just the Telegraph, sorry. EU to ban cars from cities by 2050. Okay, cars will be banned from London and all other cities across Europe under a draconian EU master plan to cut CO2 emissions by 60% over the next 40 years. And that's the motto of Agenda 21. Deindustrialization in the name of saving the Earth. As in, the reason why Earth has a problem is because the Earth has humans. Well, that's not something that I subscribe to, nor would I want to pay a subscription fee in the form of a carbon tax. But, just like with every draconian measure, they're doing it anyway. That's what I love about tyranny, is it's so freaking predictable, man. Very, very, very predictable. Follow the exact same path every time. It's incidentally why it's so successful, because it manages to conceal itself for so long. The European Commission on Monday unveiled a single European transport area aimed at enforcing, quote, a profound shift in transport patterns for passengers, i.e. you will be a slave on a cattle car. Which incidentally means the roads will be clear. The plan also envisages an end to cheap holiday flights from Britain to Southern Europe, with a target that over 50% of all journeys above 186 miles should be by rail. Yep, they probably will be, because it's a long way to them death camps. They don't want to be burning up too much of that expensive petrol, do they? Even though they control the petrol market and the prices are all a sham anyway, to cause unrest so that they can justify a police state. The top of the EU's list to clut... there must have been a Freudian slip there, to clutz climate change emissions cuts. Yeah, is a target of zero for the number of petrol and diesel-driven cars and lorries in the EU's future cities. Zero cars. Nobody will be able to do anything except walk, catch a bus or a train, full stop. You don't have any private transport. Which is convenient, because it means that, hey, everybody's life will then have to be to a very strict schedule, to the train schedule or to the bus schedule. And it'll force everybody to move out of the rural areas and come into the cities. This would be the only place where they can have any transport. And then these rural areas are being given up to things like called the Wildlands Project and the United Nations Declaration on Biosecurity or something like that. If you don't believe me, look it up. They want to depopulate the Earth. Okay? They want to shift everybody out of these areas, push you into tiny, tiny little ones. And that's what this is right here. If you don't think it's coming here, like I said, it's already here. They're already here doing it. Okay? All of the transport decisions that are being made right now are straight out of Agenda 21. They're making mega highways to connect the major cities. Okay? And they're making train loops within those cities. They're putting in parking ticket meters absolutely everywhere to discourage people from driving. It's all incrementally being set up. okay, right under our very noses. And we all complain and get angry, but we get angry at the Parkins. We don't get angry at the Agenda 21 office, do we? You know, maybe that'd be the appropriate thing. Maybe they should open up an official New World Order office, or if they don't have one, we'll open one for them. And the EU Transport Commission insisted that Brussels directives and new taxation of fuel would be used to force people out of their cars and onto alternative means of transport. That means no more conventionally fueled cars in our city centres, he said. Action will follow, legislation, real action to change behaviour. Real action to change behaviour. Oh, the government's like our parent now. They're supposed to tell us how to live. We're the ones that are supposed to tell them how to live. You know? What do these people think? That you're elected to rule with an iron fist? No, you're elected to safeguard us, not force us into submission. For F's sake. What is the political choice that people have got here? You know, and again, any political choice that you have, and there's an election year, by and large, they're all either stitched up, BS, or they won't get enough support to govern anyway, or even get a representation in government if they were like a full-on real party that was talking about real change and had the will and the means to do it. Because they don't have the funding. Okay? If you have a really, really good idea that actually benefits everybody, it means that there's a much smaller chance that a singular person or a few individuals would finance you a huge amount, because that would be a few financing one to support the many. It doesn't work that way. It's always the few financing the one to benefit the few. It's called return on investment. And, you know, conveniently, we have a lot of relaxed laws about campaign contributions. And so after you get elected, you get a knock on the door saying, hey, we'd really like you to vote on this bill. You know, vote yes. And you say, nah, I don't think so, man. That's going to sell out my people and my country. I don't want to do that. He goes, okay, are you sure? Because a lot of things are going to happen if you don't do that. You won't have a career. And we may hurt your family. And then all of a sudden you're like, uh-oh, it's getting serious now. And by and large, when it comes to that, they'll bend over. Some people don't, of course. And they get their support mainly from the communities that they've been living in for a long time, like Hone Harawira. It's this dude from Northland in New Zealand, very staunch individual, really stands up for himself and his community, and he can just win the Northland electorate like that, okay, because he's got that much support there, because he does that much work there to gain that, right? He's what you call an independent, somebody who can stand alone. Those people are very hard to buy because they're people with conviction. But on the other side of the platform, those who are just trying to get into politics for the sake of getting into politics, because they want to make a change or whatever, it's not about wanting to make a change or having a very general idea. I mean, to get into politics means to want to do something very specific. Something very specific. If you don't have a vision, an idea of where you want to be and really be willing to take any flack or bear any burden personally and not lay it all on the people, hey, then, you know, you're all sweet. But unfortunately, there's a thing called process. Now, I'm not a fan of going through processes. I think, you know, if something's going to be done, just do it. Okay, get it done. It's quick. A good plan today is better than the perfect plan tomorrow. Time is money. Time never stops for anybody, so why should anybody wait for time? All right? That's what I reckon. We're only here doing whatever we're doing at this particular moment, which conveniently stretches on through the future as well as back through history. So just got one moment to do everything that we ever dreamed. Hey, that's not a bad way of looking at it, really. And if you're getting into politics and your dream is to give the country sovereignty, to kick out the bankers, to regulate harmful substances instead of continuing on with a costly and foolish drug war, whatever real or perceived harm there may be in these substances is absolutely astronomically insignificant by comparison to the harm that is done by the policy to protect people from it. And give the country the power to issue its own currency again, kick out the foreign banks, remove judicial and parliamentary sovereignty, which means removing their immunity from prosecution for doing things in the name of the public. You know, because people really do have to think about the actions that they take. And the only reason why they're capable now of taking actions which really damage everybody else is because of the fact that they can't be held liable for it. You know, the government will be held liable. The government's not me. It's like a corporation. You know, you can't blame an employee for screwing something up. You have to blame the corporation because the employee gets covered by the corporation. They may take action against that person. They might not. It's up to them. And the corporation itself is not a human being. It doesn't have a soul. You know, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, it does. But I don't buy that. It's foolhardy. Okay? Trying to impose something that is as significant as a soul on a made-up name, on a piece of paper that gets represented with a bunch of dots, numbers, figures, and assets. That is not a soul-bearing organism. It's not. Sorry, it's not. Legally it is. Lawfully, heck no. You can't have anything. You can't jail a corporation, can you? You know, you can't wield any conventional punishment against them. That's why they get away with it. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. And we'll be right back after the break. Call in 402-237-2525. That's 402-237-2525. Back in a moment. Look at me, driving, and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations. I'll let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the lacerations. Have them all killed by assassination. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Now, did anybody see G. Edward Griffin on Glenn Beck? Eh? Isn't this amazing? He did an interview. Like, I've posted it on GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. I think it's like the second story down. And, yeah, man. Hats off to Glenn Beck, all right? But he's still a globalist slime bag. You know, he can't buy his way back in. I don't think so. No, he's pushed the establishment for too long. And now I think for the trying to run Glenn Beck as some kind of a psyop to try and, I don't know, destroy the U.S. from within using the Patriot movement to get him to do it. That's what I think. I could be wrong. Well, that's probably the intention. So, in either case, if you go to the Vinnie Eastwood Show chat room, ladies and gentlemen, at the vinnieeastwoodshow.com, it would be very nice. And we've also got the caller line open, 402-237-2525 is the number to call in. That's 402-237-2525. Now, you know, there's some stories that you read out that are funny, some that are crazy, some that are disturbing, and some that have indeed grave implications. And sometimes all of the above, like this. Libyan rebels have already set up a central bank and oil company. That's right. The Libyan rebels with their giant shiny belt buckles and such, as reported, have now set up their own central bank and oil company, no doubt with globalist finances. And, of course, the wonderful Western airstrikes to do all the work for them. You know, if the globalists can't overthrow your country by peaceful, you know, revolutionary means, then they just use the military. That's all that's going on here. The globalists are taking over the whole freaking Middle East. They're overthrowing it all to increase stability, jack up the prices of everything, and make a huge freaking crisis. Okay, order out of chaos is their motto, and there is a Shiite Muslim load of chaos coming to the Middle East. And coming your way too. Quite frankly, it's a little bit dangerous, you know, these times. But here's the thing. A lot of people, this is a realization I had, a lot of people, they get real sort of down. It's like, oh, why me? You know, why does it have to be my generation that goes through all of this kind of stuff? You know, why couldn't this happen to somebody else? You know, it's like deflecting, like as if worrying about it might actually make the problem disappear. But no. No. Here's the thing. The best time to live in is an interesting time. Crisis, though it may be, there are a lot of interesting things happening. And I'm, for one, am eternally grateful to live in such interesting times, to get to speak to such interesting people as I do in the show. And if you want to evidence that, do a little research for yourself, go to the vinnieeastwoodshow.com and click on the radio show archives. Okay? There are copious quantities of people that have been interviewed on this show that have never been interviewed anywhere else. And, of course, big names as well. I try to pride myself on getting people on radio whom you probably have not heard before, but have interesting stuff to say nonetheless. Preferably stuff that you haven't kind of thought of or heard of before. You know, I want to mix it up and make everything just a little bit different every day. You know, it's no good to go on droning about the same old tripe day in, day out. And admittedly, trying to follow the news is exactly like that. There's virtually no choice. You know, it's like Japan this, Libya that. This is the only two stories everybody's focused on now. So much else is going by the wayside. And I don't even know what it is. You know, it's terrible. This is the crisis. It's the crisis of our time. And like I say, enjoy your apocalypse. You know, the word apocalypse means the revealing of great truth. All right? And that's what the elite fear. Is the truth coming out about who they are, what their plan is, and how to stop them. It's their apocalypse, not ours. They are the ones who are afraid. And we are the ones who should be happy, joyful, cackling away, and, you know, just busting into their mansions and hanging them all. I'm joking. I don't promote violence or anything. I mean, maybe there's that kind of urge. You know how it is. How you think, oh, this person's so evil and they've killed all these people and they're the most evil scum that have ever walked the earth and they deserve to die. You could well be right, but it doesn't mean you have the right to take another human's life just because they took some themselves. You know, that kind of plug play. Again, it's a slippery slope, and I don't urge going down it at all. Peaceful, non-violent non-compliance. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and it doesn't really matter what we say, because as long as we're not killing anybody or hurting anybody or inciting people to violence, it's peaceful. Okay? This is what peaceful, non-violent non-compliance sounds like. We have a choice now, unlike most other generations in history, to acknowledge what we know, acknowledge the information that is currently deciphered, and predict what is going to happen in the future, and understand quite conservatively that we're going down a deep, dark hole, and unless we do something about it, and we do have to do something radical, we may not pull through. So it's all the more important to do something, and do it now. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. And gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. And there's just so much funny stuff going on, man. Like the UN, for example, authorizing, and this is what the UN does. Like they cruise into areas and they make sure people get slaughtered. You know, like in Rwanda and Burundi, for example, they stop the Christians from getting out of areas and set up roadblocks and stuff like that, so that the Hutus could come and slash them up with machetes. You wonder why the Hutus were so easily able to kill 150,000 plus people in such a short period of time? It's because all the people were like basically trapped, like rats. And they were just being exterminated, and the UN facilitated it. That's what these people do, and that's what they're doing now. Okay? Great video on guerrillamedia.co.nz. UN kills killers to stop killer to stop killing. UN kills killers to stop killing. This is from FKN News. If you say it real fast. And this is just hilarious, man, because it's the brilliant weapon of propaganda that allows you to dress up a globalist organization that is more or less just a holding company for criminal banks and military men to go and conquer and kill whatever place they want. Happens every time any African continent starts to go for their own diamonds or go for their own oil or something. Sure enough, the UN shows up and some well-financed rebel force starts showing up. But isn't that hilarious? You know, they're trying to make sure that nobody gets any independence. One thing that most people don't know about Libya is that it's got the most beautiful water reserves. Mm-hmm. And guess what's really hard to come by these days? Fresh water. because the water tables are all being polluted with all the crap and chemicals, pesticides, and all that kind of stuff that's being sprayed all over our cities and towns, whether that be by somebody spraying Roundup in their garden, or whether that be by chemtrails, if you believe that, or all those stuff. That we're constantly being polluted with something. If it's not something, it's something else. there's like almost no clean areas anymore, okay? They're all being contaminated, and it's done by design to make everybody sick so that they become dependent, incapable of looking after themselves, so that they can be easily herded, okay? People who are really sick can't think. And people who can't think are much easier to handle around. You have any idea how difficult it would be being a cow slaughtering farmer if the cow could think, could plot against you, could resist you, could stage riots? Imagine rioting cows. That'd be pretty freaky. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's like a pack of rioting cows. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, freedomradio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. Proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. I received a email today from a guy named Roy, who's doing up a little design for Guerrilla Media, which is pretty freaking awesome, and he did an amazing job. It looked like a freaking rock star poster, quite frankly. It was awesome. But you know, give him a few suggestions to go away and think about, and he's given me a few things to think about as well. And it's at times like these that I want to acknowledge all the contributions that people have freely had with this show. Not in the least, forgetting to mention my co-host Will, who was with the show for a good 8 months or so, and really enjoyed having him on. But unfortunately, due to recent circumstances, mostly financial, he won't be co-hosting the show anymore. And it's sad, but you know, it happens. And the show has to go on, and conveniently, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and the lighter side of genocide. So we're going to try and stay positive about it, because every contribution really, really helps, even if it's temporary or even if it's a one-off. Doesn't matter. But the thing about contributing is that if you can see the results of what you've done, for example, everybody who comes on as a guest is technically a contributor to the show. And they can see the result because there's an audio file, and one of our listeners, Timmy, does a rack of YouTube videos. Planet Earth Awakens 01 is his YouTube channel. So, you know, we produce content here, and the content apparently is enjoyed by many people, conveniently enough. Because, you know, it also really ticks off a lot of others. Which, I'm not sure which I prefer entirely as yet. Because, quite frankly, I'm a sucker for criticism. I just love it. Can't get enough. You know, it's got to be done. If you can't allow yourself to be criticized, I mean, or if you, you refuse to change your ways on thing, if you think in a fixed fashion and do not deviate, sometimes it can be a hindrance. Most times it's actually pretty handy. You just got to figure out what you're doing to advance yourself and what you're doing to hinder yourself. And in some cases, the reality is the opposite way round from which way you thought it might have been. I'm working on this really hard and I'm just ignoring that thing over there because it's of no value. Oh, well, actually, you should have been working on the other thing the whole time, mate. What you got here is bunk. Yep, that's unfortunate. But, you know, we all run into dead ends. Yeah. Politicians, for example, constantly have their words fall on deaf ears, especially politicians who are out to make an actual, real, meaningful change. And I suppose half the reason why they fall on deaf ears is because, A1, nobody actually gets to hear them because they never get on mainstream media. And two, is because they're talking about things that the public is completely unaware of. So even if they did hear them on mainstream media, they wouldn't understand what they're talking about because they've been too brainwashed by mainstream media. You know, maybe I'm kind of circling the wagons here and just pointing a finger directly at mainstream media for like all of society's problems. I think that's fair. You know, well, come on, no, seriously, you know, bear with me here. You know, why does everybody think the way they do? It's because all the information that they're really exposed, well, most of the information that they and the majority of society is exposed to is from mainstream media. Okay? Why do you think the elite have an interest in all of this? You know, I don't think that any presidential candidate would ever buy shares in a publications company or something of that nature in order to further his own political career. Would they? No, that would never happen. Oh, wait, it did. Mitt Romney owns a whole bunch of media, apparently. And he ran for president, and he made a decent run. Or, you know, what's really bad is when there's like a TV presenter or something like that. Oh, they never run for politics and use their public profile as a propaganda method to solicit votes out of the public. Oh, wait. Melissa Lee in New Zealand for the National Party. She was the host of Asia Down Under for a reasonable period of time. And the news to public. Oh! Do you see the connection? It's everywhere, man. You know, it's a big web of lies, misinformation, and very, very depressing facts. Which is why I choose to laugh about them, because there's no alternative that is preferable to me. That's it. I don't really have to justify, do I? Because everybody agrees with everybody who I've ever told about, you know, the lighter side of genocide and the whole idea of laughing about these terrible things. Everybody agrees with me. Everybody. That's unbelievable. And yet I still have people criticizing me. It's strange. You know, I should figure the concept of laughing the terrible times away would have been quite a rational one. In fact, I still believe it is. But some people, perhaps they don't share my sense of humor or share my my faith in humanity. And maybe that's part of the reason why I distrust politicians, is because I see politics as in some way has become sort of anti-humanity in its general scope and methodology. If you try to get a project accomplished or trying to benefit the country, get out decent information to people, and there's some kind of government barrier, the government barrier will always be the strongest barrier against you making a good change in this country. Okay? Always. And since when is the government supposed to just loud over everybody? You know? They're supposed to be our servants beneath our feet. Okay? I think that politicians should actually bow to the citizens when they shake their hands and such and to say, thank you for letting me serve you. Okay? I would be a turn if I was actually given the opportunity to lead people or anything, I am always incredibly grateful because it is by their will alone that I can do it. Okay? It is with their complicity that I can lead. Okay? I led a protest down Queen Street, Auckland, New Zealand, in 2003 or 4, I think it was, against the opening of the Second Iraq War. Me, as a school kid, with a megaphone, chanting up the crowd and such. I stole a speech from Independence Day and then reworked a few of the words and got everybody like all high and mighty. And then there was only supposed to be one march. It was a march from the bottom up to the top. And a few people sat up the top of the road and the megaphone was passed out. And when I got it, I whipped them into a frenzy and got everybody from the park and marched back down again. You know, and that's the power that people can give you. If only you chose to inspire them. And you know, I've had lots of people tell me after talking to me that they feel really inspired or they feel like it's awesome. And it's like, well, dude, thank you very much, because I just feel inspired anyway to do all the stuff that I do. Okay, and I don't know. I feel like I can't stop, like it would be damaging to my psyche to stop doing what I'm doing. That's my personal opinion, of course. And I could be wrong. You know, maybe in fact I'll be like the Berlusconi of talk radio. You know, I'll get publicly shamed at some point. You know, no, I'm sure there's probably plenty of stuff that I've got to be shameful about. You know, sure. Everybody does, you know. I don't want to solicit my public life all over here on radio. You know, I'm not the be-all and end-all. I'm not the you should follow everything I do or listen to everything I say. I think it's more like a healthy diet has balance, you know. And rather than come to the Vinnie Eastwood show for all your information, you come to the Vinnie Eastwood show to deal with the information that you've already received, you know, to see the same stuff in a different light. That's the function here, as well as doing a couple of other sort of aspects of the show, like getting on Kiwi activists and the minor party representatives who don't get anybody who deserves media time essentially and has not got it to a great enough extent so that they've solidified themselves in public consciousness. I kind of feel this compulsion to get them on my show because I have 2 hours a day. With which to fill up. Sometimes I feel like I need to say certain things and take up a bit of time that way. And other times I think it's very important to listen to others and what they have to say, because ultimately I think that other people's opinions are more valuable than mine. Mine is irrelevant because my opinion only pertains necessarily to myself. You can either agree or disagree with what I've got to say, but the end decision in that equation rests with you. You have to make the decision about whether or not you believe or want to follow the things that I say or the people that we bring on the show. Okay, that's the end point of responsibility, and that's why I try to emphasize personal responsibility, is because you become a lot more powerful if you are independent and capable of supporting your own equations, all right? If you're capable of researching and asking a question, finding out the answer by yourself without asking somebody, then you're that much better off, okay? And this applies to many different things. I remember what I like to do in some cases is teaching people how to use computer programs, like Skype, for example. Skype's an incredible program. It allows you to communicate with people all over the place. And I find myself teaching the elderly and the technologically illiterate how to use Skype, and then they start using it like never before and they're great. Or even just teaching somebody how to use Google. You ever get questions from people and you think, bro, I don't know, just Google it. You know, when in actual fact, what they should do is they should ask the question to Google first and then ask me. But then again, Google's controlled by CIA. I don't know. maybe that's why I like to use all these tools of the enemy, because it's, I don't know, I like being cheeky, quite frankly. I like being somewhat of a scallywag, so I love the idea of stealing weaponry off the enemy and then shooting them with it. You know, like Radio Ninja. it's a fun life, I say. And if you're not having fun, you're not living life. Now get with the program. Life is not a dress rehearsal. You have limited options, okay? You can only run with one option at any one time. You can't freaking multitask when it comes to saving the world. You know, or saving humanity, like I say, is different from saving the world. Because, like I was referred to earlier, Agenda 21 and the whole concept of the globalists to regulate and tax carbon is a way of, in fact, regulating and taxing every form of human activity, from breathing to house building to growing plants, is a way to regulate it all. Tax is a regulation in and of itself. It never solves problems, but it sure as if stops you from making any. You know, making any problems with a tax man, that's for dang sure. And what about the census? You know, did you know that the census is given to, like, defense contractors? Okay? No, seriously. I heard this. In the States, right? No, the UK. The UK. I think it was, like, a defense contractor for Lockheed Martin or Halliburton or one of these evil globalist scumbag organizations are the companies that are tasked with collecting the census. Okay? And there's a reason for that, because they're drawing military plans up against you right at this very moment. And they've been drawn up for quite some time. And the census just allows them to adjust their plans a little. And also, you know, they use it for other things of that nature. They were it was Lockheed Martin, and they were given the UK census, and they say, oh, we're just doing our job. Well, what's your job as a defense contractor other than to make things that kill people? You know, am I just kind of like a little bit off my rocker here when I see a problem with people who make weaponry that kills people gathering information about our entire population? Maybe there's cause for alarm, you know, at the very least. Don't, under any circumstances, assume that people who are quite okay with killing or selling things that kill will just, you know, suddenly go, oh, no, we don't want to kill our own citizens. No, that's just wrong. They will, and they have. I can guarantee you. A whole bunch of people have died in weapons tests or something and probably been covered up. Who knows? But I have serious, serious, serious doubts that the people who make money off of weaponry and killing people have a terribly large amount of concern for human life. That's just my assumption. I could be wrong. Maybe they're fairly patriotic, and all they use their nuclear warheads for is killing cicadas that swarm over small American towns or something, you know, fastidious and kindly of that nature. But I expect not. Because unfortunately, what they're doing instead is funding rebellions, like the rebels in Libya, who are in the middle of a life and death war with Muammar Gaddafi, is still in power, and yet somehow the Libyan rebels had enough time to establish the new Central Bank of Libya and form a new national oil company. Who do you suppose they drafted the documentation expertise for that? Who's backing the rebels? Oh, yeah, that's right. The US and NATO and the UN. What's the modern equivalent of fascism again? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the US.
the EU and the UN all binding together to totally enslave whomever they choose and to steal all their resources and to destabilize the world and to make it so that everything is just that little bit more horrible in your neck of the woods, and justifiably so, because they made sure of it by creating the very crisis to which you're going to beg them to save you from. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. We'll be right back.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio, broadcasting live from the future. From underwater, on the radioactive seas, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
With gills. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now, it's Kiwi Collaborator time again for you. And you know how yesterday I promised, after having the Republican on, that we would have a representative from each of the minor parties, which in my opinion don't get enough media coverage as they deserve, preferably the heads of those parties, onto the show so that we can record a decent interview, nice and friendly, and let everybody know what they're all about, because mainstream media won't do anything like that. And so it's in that very spirit of letting people be heard, I bring you Russell Norman, the co-leader of the New Zealand Green Party, live from Wellington. Russell, welcome to the program.
G'day, Vinny. How's it going?
Well, you know, borderlining on fabulous is my party line, so in this election I'm going to vote fabulous.
Excellent.
Now, one thing I'd like to ascertain from you, Russell, is just where the Green Party has managed to come from in terms of this country's history. What was it born out of? Who were its founding members? And would they be supportive of what the Green Party's turned into today?
Well, you could probably trace the Green Party back to the first, what you might call the first environmental party at a national level in the world, which was the Values Party in New Zealand, which goes back to the early 1970s. And that was a classic kind of post-materialist party, if you like. That is, that it was a bunch of people who were motivated by ideas that weren't just about materialism, more money, more stuff, more of everything. And so that was some of their fundamental driving values, if you like. And so that was particularly focused on protecting the natural environment. But it was about much more than that. It was about trying to value the things that mattered, such as community and people and relationships, and not just getting more and more consumer stuff. So that went on for a few elections. It it got some reasonable votes, but it never got anyone elected into parliament. And then there was a revival of the kind of green movement in the late 1980s. And the kind of modern Green Party, if you like, appeared in 1990. And we've been continuously kind of in the current form since 1990, though we did have a while when we were inside a larger formation called the Alliance with some other parties. In terms of whether there's a continuity of ideology and beliefs between those who founded the party and now, I think so. The modern Green Party these days, we're very much focused on issues of how we live sustainably within the limits of the natural world, and also very focused on the quality of relationships between people and how we look after each other. So I think there is a fair degree of continuity between then and now.
Well, we kind of talk on the show about the lack of a difference nowadays between left and right, and most people see the Green Party as sitting firmly on the left. Would you agree with that?
I think if you look at a lot of our social policies, that's a fair comment. On the other hand, I would argue that the Green movement brings something new to the table. The Green Party and the Green Movement has a lot of issues that we care about, but I think the one new idea that was introduced by the Green Movement, which didn't exist in the history, really, of political thought before that, was the idea of a finite planet, and that we can't continuously grow and expand our resource use and our pollution production, and that we have to work within the limits of a finite planet. And so on questions of freedom or equity, they have to be resolved within the limits of the planet that we have. And the old left idea, for example, which was you grow the cake and give a little bit more to those at the bottom, simply doesn't work because we can't continue to grow the cake because the planet itself is limited. I believe the Greens
brought
a new element to that.
So what happens to all those people left out at the bottom who aren't getting any cake because we can't grow it?
Well, our view is that the cake is large enough for everybody. It's large enough for everyone's need, but it's not large enough for everyone's greed. So there's enough resource that we can all live good lives, but we need to share it around. So that's a kind of old left idea in a way, but it's placed within a different framework to the social democrats who kind of preceded us, and their view that you just keep growing it, because we don't think you can. And the attempt to keep growing the economy is resulting in massive ecological destruction and some very significant environmental changes, such as climate change, that will be very bad for people as well.
Well, see, technically, I'm a climate denier, so we'll just avoid that one. But the thing is, it's like on the points you agree, you come together and you collaborate. On the points that you disagree, you can kind of leave those arguments for another time, because it seems increasingly, especially in modern politics, that disagreeing and arguing about things seems to entrench people more rather than conjure them into some form of cooperation. And I see this, and the form of cooperation that does come about is usually not very good. One thing that's of particular concern to me anyway, and the Green Party too, as I believe Keith told me, Keith Locke, that the search and surveillance bill is something that's basically opposed by the Greens and basically nobody else, you know, and the kind of rampant police state mentality that people like Judith Collins seem to be pushing, they're going to get it. And somebody told me that the search and surveillance bill is already passed, and it conjures up a lot of course, references to Soviet-style Russia and Nazi Germany and the modern United States. But, it just really deeply concerns me. And I wanted to know your personal thoughts on the state and its ability to have overreaching power into people's lives.
It's one of the great paradoxes of the late 20th century, beginning of the 21st century, is that the new right came to dominate politics in the English-speaking Western world throughout the 80s and 90s. And supposedly it was based on the idea of small government. And then they started to introduce a series of extremely intrusive surveillance state activities, and we now live in societies where the level of surveillance is greater than anyone's ever experienced really before. And so on the one hand they told us they were into freedom, and on the other hand they have now introduced massive levels of surveillance of all of our activities. So the Green Party has long taken a view that we support personal freedom and personal liberty, and that means freedom from constant surveillance from the state. We accept the necessity of taxation, and we think taxation's an essential part of living in a civilized society, and so that we have public health and public education systems. But we don't believe that we need to live under constant surveillance from the government, and that's where the parties of both the Labor Party and the National Party here have taken us, and we think that's a great loss.
Well, and that's the primary reason why I want to have all the minor parties on the show, Russell, because in my opinion, it's the minor parties that are on the fringes that provide different ideas and provide a different direction for the country to go in, and the major parties, basically if we have a look at their track records, both the Labor and National Party both have gotten this country into astronomical amounts of debt, both have sold out its assets, both have taken away our rights, freedoms, liberties, and both have made the cost of living much worse, and both have increased more draconian measures to curtail our otherwise, you know, free, happy-go-lucky lives. And so, therefore, it's my opinion, of course, that it's the fringe parties that will actually produce solutions to the problems that we face as a nation and not the current larger ones. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, aside from we don't consider ourselves to be fringe parties, I agree with your analysis in the sense that we are facing a number of systemic changes. Or rather, we're facing a number of systemic challenges, and the old parties are very poorly placed to deal with that because they are themselves part of the system and have created it. I mean, aside from the list that you gave, which I agree with, there's, you could add other things such as oil dependency. Both of the larger parties have increased our country's oil dependency, and it's just, you know, that clearly the case that oil will never be cheap again. So why would you go down a path of borrowing billions of dollars to increase oil dependency by building motorways and so forth and not investing in alternative public transport systems and walking and cycling? I think a healthy political ecosystem has multiple players within it. And so that's why our MMP system is such a great system, because it creates a space for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the oil and all of that kind of jazz? Who is it? Is it BP now who wants to start drilling off the coast of New Zealand, and there's a big protest or something going on about that? You know, and the fossil fuel engine's been obsolete for 50 years or something. There's something along the lines of 6,000 patents that are held by the U.S. Patent Office that are held secret under national security. These are things like water fuel engines and, you know, goodness knows. You know, you could only imagine what technology is within 6,000 patents that are classified under national security. You can only imagine. And so our fuel price, the cost of fuel and the ability to pollute the planet, the ability to stop these things here and now by utilizing the technology we've already got is there. However, the political will, I believe, is somewhat waned by special interest groups who have infiltrated and essentially, in my opinion, implemented a concept known as state capture, where they have influence at the policy level in government. And in that process, we get denied the possibilities that we really, really need in order to make this country great. And it's just a terrible state of affairs. And in your experience in Parliament, Russell, which is considerable by comparison to mine, of course, what is the main problem you see with change, like real, actual, proper, not I'm gonna beg for it, change going on in Parliament?
Well, I mean, the two old parties are very entrenched. So you have an element whereby, you know, people get stuck in their ways and their ideas and they struggle to see anything new. You also have, obviously, the kind of economic realities press very heavily on Parliament, so the existing economic order is able to press its particular views on government and on legislators. So, you know, they have lobbyists and all the rest of it in order to protect the existing economic order and the way things are currently. So we have the road transport lobby, for example, gives lots of money to National and Labor in order to make sure that National and Labor maintain the system of subsidising road transport rather than, say, sea transport and train freight. So, you know, we have, you know, the existing political, the existing economic players have the ability to do that. It's also true that, you know, we have voices such as the Greens within the Parliament because of MMP, which challenged that, and I think that's a really good development. And so part of our job is to continue to challenge that and to keep getting the message out there that there are alternatives to oil-based dependency and development. And you don't even have to look at anything particularly wild ideas to look at that. I mean, just public
There's simple solutions right here and now anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So you don't have to be that wild. Just look that there are alternatives to just throwing billions and billions of dollars at new megaways. In fact, I would argue that in a world where oil is undoubtedly increasing in cost, and the International Energy Agency is absolutely plain as day about this now, you would have to be slightly insane, actually, to borrow billions of dollars to build new motorways when you know that oil is going through the roof.
Well, I agree with you on one point. They're absolutely insane. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My remarkably special guest is Russell Norman, the co-leader of the New Zealand Green Party, live from Wellington. And we'll be right back after the break. Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. It's the lighter side of genocide, ladies and gentlemen, so when you look outside and you have a look at the news and try to figure out what's going on in the world around you, you realize it's all effed and we're all going to die, so it's all good. And on that note, one of the people that is trusted with the protection of this country in some way, shape, or form, or at the very least some of our remaining rights or liberties as they get stripped away in front of our eyes, it's Russell Norman from the Green Party. Welcome back from break, my friend.
Hi, Vinny.
Yeah, mate. Hey, what's one thing I just wanted to clear up with you. You are in yourself, you're particularly against the search and surveillance bill, are you?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And what's your stance on judicial and parliamentary immunity?
Immunity from what?
Well, if you make a decision in Parliament, you know how Parliament's sovereign, and No Parliament can rewrite laws over the other thing. I remember you told me this back in the Mount Albert campaign. That's the kind of parliamentary sovereignty I'm talking about. Do you think that the people of government should be able to do that kind of thing without any checks and balances to the equation?
New Zealand has a sovereign parliament, or supposedly, and so that means whatever laws parliament passes, that's the law of the land. I'm not quite sure what you're getting at, Vinny, to be honest.
Well, like, for example, during the Super City, the government signed a bill which negated the public's ability to have a binding referendum, as they were guaranteed under the Local Government Act, in order to forcibly amalgamate the Super City. Okay? That's what I'm talking about. I think that there should be a proviso that if the government is going to make big decisions or something of that nature, they should be held accountable, perhaps to a jury system, but certainly they shouldn't have their decisions be completely above reproach as parliamentary and judicial immunity or otherwise sovereignty kind of implies. You're sort of protected from the outcome of their own decisions sort of thing.
So the question is in, you know, constructing a democratic system, somewhere you have to delegate responsibility for making the law. And so in a lot of other countries, of course, the constitution is like a meta-law. And so any law that a parliament passes can't breach the constitution, and so you have supreme courts or high courts that have the ability to say that a law is unconstitutional. And in New Zealand, we don't have a written constitution. Obviously, we have an unwritten one. And that question of the ability of the Supreme Court of New Zealand to say that a law is against the unwritten constitution is not really one that's very well tested, but potentially could happen. It would depend on the nature of the law. But it's basically, we live in a system where Parliament's sovereign and it can pretty much do what it likes.
Well, and this is the thing. If you allow, like, if I make a mistake, Russell, you know, I could probably, I don't know, I could damage my family's life, perhaps my partner's life or something. You know, if something tragic were to happen to me because of my own foolishness or my arrogance or it, name your crisis. But however, if a politician makes a mistake, it could potentially kill thousands of people or cause immense amounts of suffering, you know, things like that. That's the apprehension I have when it comes to the application of laws that control citizens' lives to a certain extent. You know, like the search and surveillance bill's perfect case in point. It completely undermines any concept of living in a free and democratic society, doesn't it? Because it forces to journalists to reveal their sources and do all this. And I don't find this to be an isolated incident either with the search and surveillance bill. It seems like we're on a road of natural progression here to a certain extent to tyranny. And it's being facilitated specifically because of parliamentary sovereignty, because they can't get anybody at the tiller of the ship to turn her around because of the two main parties are entrenched this way so well.
I certainly agree with your critique of where the Parliament's been going in terms of search and surveillance bill. The question is, how would you make to whom would a democratically elected parliament be accountable?
You'd have to have some kind of independent body, somebody who's not being paid for. Like, for example, we have jury systems in judicial cases. There's an idea called a sovereign jury or a grand jury or something along those lines, where if a politician does a job and they do it wrong, you can submit your evidence to the grand jury and they'll give you a hearing. And if the evidence stacks up, then that politician will be suspended from service pending investigation. That's essentially what it does. It gives a citizen activist the ability to directly question their own MPs in their own areas kind of thing. It sort of brings a lot more locality back into the government. That's what I'd love to see.
I don't really have the answer for you there, Vinny. I mean, from my point of view, at some point or another, you need to decide who's going to make the law, and within what framework. Any kind of system has to deal with that question. In a democratic system, what you try to do is the people who make the law are accountable, like once every 3 years or however often, and that you provide certain rules as to what they can and can't pass. So if the New Zealand Parliament, for example, tried to pass a law that allowed torture, the question is, would the Supreme Court of New Zealand strike down that law as against an unwritten constitution? We don't know the answer to that. But if you had a written constitution, then at least you'd know exactly what the framework is within which the New Zealand Parliament could operate. And
I agree, Russell. Thank you very much for coming on the show today, man. It's been an absolute pleasure, and you're welcome to come back on again during the election campaigns, mate.
Pleasure. Thanks, Vinny.
Thanks, Russell. See you later. Russell Norman from the Greens. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Check us out at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow.